know, there's so much energy, especially in Nigeria or on the continent, period, about filmmaking, right? And, you know, the ask was, how do we create, you know, this community of filmmakers who could be self-sustaining, right? You know, not having to come abroad and create, you know, and take away jobs, you know. And the thing that was cool about it was, you know, the target audience that they wanted us to kind of challenge was working professionals. So, you know, having two nominated lighting designers, or three nominated best lighting for, you know, the country of Nigeria, in the class, plus, you know, working gaffers, working cinematographers, you know, like award-winning directors, you know, fashion photographers.
Welcome to Josiah's Voice. This podcast connects you with both new storytellers and seasoned pros in Black cinema. Plus, I share my own creative journey along the way. Here's to elevating the culture. What's up, everybody? This is Josiah, host of Josiah's Voice on Black Filmmaking. Welcome back to another exciting, exciting episode. Today we're talking cinematography and film lighting, all things cinematography, with an Emmy Award-winning lighting director, Justin Davis. And so I want you guys to help me welcome Justin Davis. Justin, welcome.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. Some of Justin's credits include collaborations on Spike Lee joints like Black Klansman, The Sweet Blood of Jesus, and he has also won an Emmy for his work with the pre-game show of the Super Bowl. I have my numerals messed up. Which one was it again? Because I'm a film guy.
Yeah, the 2021-2022 season, so last year, last Super Bowl.
Congratulations to you. That's awesome, man. So let's jump right on in. There's a lot to cover today, but something really big and I see is near and dear to your heart is working with the 3-day lighting course, Cinematography, Composition, and Lighting Masterclass here on the continent of Africa. And you're just making resources and classes available to aspiring and even current storytellers who want to learn more about lighting. What is that class and how did you get involved with it?
I think the most interesting thing about, teaching is always kind of how you get into it. Christian Epps, who has been a very pivotal part in teaching in the continent, was, you know, always pushing me, kind of talking about it. Last year was my first time teaching in Zambia. And, you know, that experience was exciting. He's been teaching abroad and especially on the continent since 2006. So his company, Lights, Camera, Diaspora, has, you know, kind of really laid a lot of groundwork for, you know, educators who want to come from, the U.S. to abroad or wherever. Because he sets up a lot of these programs with, different organizations like Multi-Choice. Talent Factory is one of those things that he works with, you know, and then he kind of creates these small communities within the industry that allow, his network to kind of start teaching. I think, and I think the thing that was cool with what he does is anytime he does work out here, out on the continent as well, he also kind of creates kind of avenues and platforms for people to learn. Black is King, he had like an internship. So it's just, piggybacking off people who are already doing the work. The 3-day workshop in Lagos was something cool because, me coming from New York, meeting Joe Penny, but he also knew Next Thought and Ani Productions. They were so excited about creating something because, there's so much energy, especially in Nigeria or in the continent, period, about filmmaking, right? And, you know, the ask was, how do we create, this community of filmmakers who could be self-sustaining, right? You know, not having to come abroad and create, and take away jobs, and the thing that was cool about it was, the target audience that they wanted us to kind of challenge was working professionals. So, having two nominated lighting designers, or three, sorry, three nominated best lighting for, the country of Nigeria, in the class, plus, working gaffers, working cinematographers, award-winning directors, fashion photographers who, credits supersede mine, but the honest truth is that they just want to have that leverage to kind of hold their jobs, right? And it's not like it's a fight, but it's real. It's like, people come in and they just swoop in, right? They don't then, there's qualified professionals among us, but how it works, people assume that outside talent is better. So that's what we're trying to do
That's
the
right.
most, focus on the most, is trying to create these sustainable ecosystems so that people can do their jobs, and it's creating jobs, because you the thing that the thing that me being a novice to traveling to the continent is, you start to notice that people are traveling distances, out of respect. It's like, let's give them as much as we can. So we partnered with a post house company, Harbor Pictures, in New who they have offices in LA, New York, and London, and they're, for us, that was a big deal, because they're able to kind of push things forward, kind of helping them with their brands. They had a kind of resume review session, and kind of talking to all the students, so how they can like promote themselves in a more global place. And that's huge, because it's like, sometimes it's just, you need someone to kind of give you the confidence to say that you're already doing it right? Because they were looking at their websites, kind of going through it, and just, oh my gosh, this is perfect, right? Not saying that, you're better or you're worse, but it's just, just kind of guiding people along, to kind of make them feel like, you're getting closer, or you're there, right?
Exactly. What does the 3-day workshop offer for those who are new to it?
Yeah, I mean, so it's a interesting class, because it's a live class, right? It's structured based off of, a lesson plan that we created. We have every day would be kind of a practical, in class kind of like teach session, and a practical workshop in the afternoon. But it's kind of touching on the physics of lighting, kind of understanding, interior, exterior lighting, lighting on a set from day to night, fast, fashion kind of setups, tabletop stuff, it just, things to kind of bring this more professional, polished look, right? Things that you've already done. There's moments where, we'll just stop in the middle of a lecture because someone had a question, and just show it, right? Because we're in a studio and we're in a space. I think one of the questions was, how do you light a large room and then, make sure that everyone's covered? So stopped, I set it up, and just like, hey, look, and then stand back and see how many people are covered, because that's all we're really thinking about, like how much space is it causing, like if it's, if it needs, the light needs to be higher so it's not creating shadows, kind of starting to talk about kind of the physics of placement, right, and understanding how you're seeing it. Most students, especially the ones who aren't technicians, are nervous about, how can I be the person that is the quality control, right? Like I'm not a qualified professional, but it's again, creating that understanding, right? That we're just looking at this small window, right? And as long as you can look inside this window and just, and be able to articulate, right, what you think looks good or bad, right? And your personal aesthetic, right, is all you need to do, right? Because you just need to communicate. As a director, all you do is translate that to your director of photography, right? As a producer, I mean, you know how it works. It's like they'll just come on set yelling, "It's dark," or "It's too bright," or "It doesn't look good," right? But with that, but with now, with that understanding, it's like you can kind of start to articulate why, right? The people aren't looking at you like your head's like all over. I mean, I don't know. It's fun because it's live, and I try to keep a live class. I've been teaching for a while now, on the graduate level in college, and it's, and for me, it's just like, it's What it is for me is just breaking down that bar, that like wall of anxiety, right? Because we're all creators, right? We all understand how to what we like and what we don't like. We're all here for a reason, right? It's just finding your voice and being very comfortable, and that's vulnerable, right? Like when you find your actual voice, kind of no recovery because you most of those times you don't give yourself a plan B. You're like, all right, well, this is what I'm gonna do. And if someone says like no, that moment can be crippling, right? Like still insecure in your craft.
What was a highlighted response when the weekend was over? Since this was the first time this had happened, is that correct?
The first time that we created the 3-day workshop, yes. It was I mean I think the thing that I've learned about teaching is that like it's more of this compassion and exchange, right? Like if I'm the dogmatic authoritarian, it doesn't work, right? You close your eyes and they're just staring at you. But if you feel if there's the push and pull where you're allowing yourself to be challenged and you're because that opens up the room, right? Like if I say that at any point you can stop me and tell me whether that there's something that's conflicting or something that you see. It allows that ground to be softer when I'm saying, all right, well, I feel this way, right? Because now we both have opinions on this, and at this point you could say, I don't feel this way, and I say, all right, let's stand up and let's see, right? Because someone might say, oh, this nose shadow is too much, right? Like I don't like that. That doesn't look good, right? And I'll say, okay, let's move this light source around until that nose shadow leaves, right? And then like you start to kind of create the understanding because that could be the moment where you just stop and then everyone just starts relighting the whole scene, right? Because it's just that uncertainty because you're just hearing something doesn't look good. So you're just like, all right, let's go back and do it all over again. Or moving the camera around, right? Like, and that's kind of the the quick tricks that, you kind of like implement on the spot because sometimes it's just about time, right? Sometimes it has nothing to do with whether it looks good or bad. It's just, you just got to find quick ways to, make things look good, right? Like, and especially when you're doing TV, you have, a certain amount of pages a day.
We were talking off mic. Can you tell the people where else the 3-day lighting workshop plans to go in Africa?
Well, the 3-day workshop is going to go to Abidjan this year as well as Lagos. But I was talking about a couple of other courses that will be going on as well. A lights camera diaspora is very integral in the education of cinema abroad, especially on the continent. We'll be in Zambia. We'll also be teaching another class in Lagos for 2 weeks, and we'll also have like a couple of master class like Senegal. But I mean, again, well, once we have that all out, we'll advertise that and it'll be available. I mean, I think we know we have these contracts in June, May, and in July. So, concrete dates we can give that once, we have those. But, I enjoy it, man. It's really a pleasure. It's a privilege and an honor. I'm grateful for people allowing us to be in that space.
That's fantastic, man. Let's segue briefly. You mentioned, you are teaching at the graduate level, as I understand it, NYU Tisch. How did you get involved in teaching, and did you always see yourself as able to teach?
Well, I mean, I've always been somewhat of a teacher, I guess I would say. I mean, being, you kind of do like workshops and clinics and I've always been in peer-to-peer kind of clubs and events since I've been in high school and middle school. So I guess it's just part of me. Both of my parents are educators, right? My dad has his doctorate. My mom is, so many masters in her craft. But like, it's just, I don't know. It's part of me. My grandparents, they always told the stories, and so it's just a part of who I was raised to be, I guess. Is not to say that my world was based on education, but it's just the people that inspire you, right? Throughout your life. So I guess it was just something that I saw often, right? How I got there. I guess it was from one of my friends who was teaching a graduate level class, and he asked me to come in and lecture. You know, it's I think the most interesting thing about that is, like, you know, it, as anybody, you're terrified. You're like, what? Seriously? And then, like, you realize that, like, the knowledge that you're just speaking in, like, commonplace is still at, like, you know, a high level for most people, right? Because we're experiencing it every day at a high pace. So, you know, once you realize that, it kind of eases your mind a lot, right? Like, because you realize that, like, what you're saying is still so valid and relevant, solely because it's, like, you know, reference books have to at least be dated by 10 years because it's a reference, right? It has to be edited, it has to be processed. So, you know, the information that's coming off of, you know, from the field into the classroom is just always going to have this, you know, appeal to it. So yeah, once you get past that anxiety, it becomes easier, right? I mean, I think, you know, we're all nervous about that moment when a student's staring at you and you really don't know if they're listening. And then the last moment you hear them say, in the beginning of class, you said, and you're like, oh, okay. You know, so it's like, it's those moments where you kind of be like, all right, well, you know, I'm self-conscious, but it doesn't mean that they're not listening. Like, and you get past that, and then, you know, it starts to become a lot more open. Because, you know, you have to realize that what you're offering is still information that they wouldn't have access to. So it's with that intention, and, you know, always intending to kind of create a larger space. And for me, you know, always having the sense of I have to create value, especially for people who are, you know, paying for it, right? I think that's something that is important, right? Like, I have to give them my undivided attention. So, you know, it's I don't know, it's me. I put a lot of weight on myself, but it's fun. I enjoy it, and because it's like it's what we're doing now, and it's just a casual conversation. And, you know, you kind of lay out your lesson plan, but, like, it's like it moves, like, and it's fun because it's a living medium. And, you know, I think that's how I teach the class because, you know, if you get so fixated on some kind of rubric, when you run out of time, it's like, what are you going to do? You have to either finish or you have to, you know, go through that arduous process and waste the time. So sometimes it's like, you know, just be live because that's just filmmaking, literally.
Yeah, you got to be flexible, and it keeps you on your toes. I've heard teachers say that because, like you said, it's live. Maybe there's not a camera, but it is live exchange with the students, whether they're young students or whether it's even, full adults. Like I'm remembering, like night classes I was in, and the things you're talking about, it's still engagement, and you're hoping that you're adding value. Like you said, people are paying for these courses and things of that nature, and you want them to get their money's worth. You want the transformation to be worthwhile, whether you're learning to drive or whether you're learning how to light a scene a certain way. And I think that's great. What's maybe one or two qualities that you think really makes a teacher impactful, whether it's teaching lighting or in general?
I can only speak personally because I know how I like to be taught. Yeah, no, patience. I think patience is something that, you know, is important. I don't know. It's just that place that you just learn the patience, you know, the meticulousness, you know, the order, the organization. Building your own thing. So it's just like, you know, asking questions, like, you know, always talk, like working with my grandfather, right? Like, you know, you have to know all the screws. You have to know all the tools, right? Like, and when I come up with the tools, they're just passing to me, right? Like, and then it's just that, like, all right, well, I'm learning the tools, right? All right. Now I'm actually fixing, I'm screwing it, right? Now from me screwing it, now I'm lifting it up into there, and you know, now I'm doing it, right? Like, I don't know, that's just how I learned my whole life. And, you know, my dad and my grandfather were all doers, my mom was just like, just do it, you know, you learn by just going. Like, there's no other way. Like, you have to fail, you have to be bad. You have to be really bad because you have to know, you have to practice, you have to, like, get fired, or someone has to tell you something, you know, so egregious that you're like, what, for you to actually want to grow, right? Like, and it's like, you know, you have to keep hitting these markers.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely something I get from whenever I've been on set, and just that ha the hands-on technical aspects. I come, if you weren't aware, for those who are new to the show, I come from an interest in screenwriting and storytelling, in that specific that way. And there's plenty of work and things like that and great qualities that go into the success of being a screenwriter. But these tactile things, lighting the scene, loading the camera, lenses, etc., it does seem to bring, it brings something else out. So you're echoing things that I've
Oh, it's a
heard.
craft. No, it's you're literally you have to. It's you have to get your hours. It's there's no way around it. You can't act as if you're practicing in the hours and the intentional practice and the intentional studying of the craft. You can't get past that. I mean, yes, the art form is intuitive, but I mean, the more you learn and the more you kind of expand your mind on what the art form and your interpretation of the art form is, it just only gets more compound and more personal, right? It becomes ultimately a subjective story now because you start to kind of skew your vision into this like very close perspective of how you're telling a story.
Exactly. Before we go to break, is there anything more you'd like the people to know about the 3-day lighting class?
I mean, this year we're doing one a quarter at this rate. So we started in January. We'll have two in June. One will be in Abidjan and the other one will be in Lagos. And then we're gearing up for another one in September, October. So it's every quarter we're trying to hit another 3-day workshop. It's nice because from what's happening currently. It's this like people keep asking us to come and do it in their region or in their local location because there's such a need, right? I'm not I, again the more I learn about filmmakers on the continent it's just that from my understanding or from what I keep learning I'm still ignorant to a lot of this but it's just that there is no formal education on filmmaking. A lot of people are learning from YouTube.
Right.
A lot of people are learning from like Instagram hits and these conversations here, right? So just offering more access and then not only access, but access from like the top professionals in Hollywood, right? Like Christian Neff's, his list goes all the way down my arm, right? Like starting in the 80s, Romulus Burgess, right? And then a lot of other people who keep jumping on, right? Like, it's exciting, getting educational institutions involved, right? Like it's like a lot of these deals that we're still kind of connecting the dots with, creating opportunities for our students, our workshop. So it's like, last time we were able to kind of engage a student, a talent pool, and then engage them with like a post house, right? Kind of creating directors, a personal access to like a post house, editors able to kind of communicate with the post house, right? The post house, kind of being excited about, doing work in the continent, right? And, this post house being one of our sponsors, Harbor Pictures, right? So it's like talking about all these relationships that we're kind of creating just based off of education with the intention of creating a better workforce for people who live here, right? And that's our intention. There is nothing else. We're not trying to take anything. We're just trying to create, these access points, right? Because, it's something that is being called on us, and we're excited to work, and we're excited to be able to, help as much as we can. And the thing about it, as a filmmaker, you learn so much more when you find out a different process, period. Like, and it's like I can't say that I'm not learning. I've been doing the same, the majority of my career, but then you go to a different, environment and people are using way less gear material than you and still producing the same quality of images is exciting to me because it's you just get so accustomed to your ways and your styles. And now that especially Nollywood, Nigeria is growing, it's just like the quality of images is shifting drastically, right? And professionals are moving up the ladder so fast. And, some of the dialogues that I'm having offline, with a lot of professionals is that, It's how are we getting there, and how do we bring more people with us, right? Because it's what happens is that they get to this point, and then they either go to the U.S., London, they go to South Africa, they go to Australia, and then the next person's time to rise, right? Like without having some kind of feeder system to kind of create this kind of softer transition.
Yet, in fact, to the technology point, but even overall, what impressions or feelings did you go through when you faced the challenges of any limitations on technology while teaching classes? But like you said, quality was being produced. And I assume, I don't want to say the sharpest, but like, you were seeing, I assume you were seeing the potential and the creativity coming out of the students.
They're there. It's not a potential. They're there. They're creating the work. They're literally a lot of these students are because they are there. I think the actual sentiment or conversation that I'm having is I'm learning. I'm like, whoa, like, okay, so we're using only this amount of lights, specifically apertures, right? Not even just to kind of like name drop lights, but and you're making it look like you had a whole wall of 18K. That's amazing, right? being able to kind of pull from house power to create these magnificent sets that we can't deny. You watch all the videos, you watch all the movies, so we can name them all, right? Like, and you know them, you've seen them, like, and I think that's the exciting part, right? A lot of I still kind of connect with my Zambian students, and it's even different there, right? Like, having a smaller lighting package but still pulling off this high quality look. And it's just playing because it's like, with that still an interconnected community and communication, now I'm taking this and going to work with it because it's like, okay, cool, wow, okay. And it's just the what happens to people when you just engage that creative mindset, right? Like, it's not, you're not limited by the tools you have, it's just what are you creating with them?
Wow, I had a feeling you'd say something like that because it's just the transformation just sounds undeniable. Was that surprising for you? Like, were you like you come across very open and humble, but you sound like you're getting so much, and that's still a part of it.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it look, trust me, like, the selfish thing that I'm gaining from this is like that engagement, right? The feeling of someone who is so excited about the industry. There's a point in your career when you hit that ceiling when everyone's just cranky, no one's passionate about it. I mean, they're passionate, but it's just like, that it's just they've been doing it for 30 years. And then you're re-engaging and looking at people who were just as excited as you when you started. You so much energy, it like reinvigorates you literally. Like, you're just like, oh my gosh, all right, so people are excited about this, like, and you're like, oh wow, all right, let's keep this energy because now I can go back and work 6 months because, like, all right, well, I know that this work is being able to be transformed into some kind of positive energy for a group of people who would not even have this access. Not saying that I'm the one that's creating some kind of energy, but it's like the whole ecosystem of working, coming back, working, coming back, and experiencing students, right? Like, because it's they still have that knowledge base. The things that you learn about like new filmmakers is they're like they know all the tech, they know all the tech. The thing that you that like happens once you start to kind of create your own systems, you might filter in one or two new techs, but like you're not engaging with a lot of tech unless you're staying up on it.
That's awesome. So it's mutual transformation, mutual exchange of creativity, and that sounds like teaching.
I know nothing, so I learn, right? And I continue to learn.
That's awesome. Guys, I hope you're enjoying this. We're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with more with Justin Davis. Stay tuned. Want longer episodes before everyone else? Excited for exclusive VIP content? Or maybe you'd just like to support the show? You're in luck. Josiah's voice on Black Filmmaking is now on Patreon. Become a member today at patreon.com/josiahjohnson.
josiahsvoice.
This episode of Josiah's Voice podcast is brought to you by Newsly. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural, smooth human voice. It won't be my voice, but no app is perfect, but this one's pretty close. Because for the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. Browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. You can follow any topic as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin, or pop culture and movies. It will find you the latest articles and read them to you aloud. And they have podcasts as well, exploring trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Like this one. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me. That's www.newsly.me. Or from the link in the description. And use my promo code, Josiah Voice. Josiah Voice. I'll put that in the description for you. When you click it, you'll receive a 1 month free premium subscription to Newsly. Stop scrolling. Start listening with Newsly.
What's up, guys? We're back with Justin Davis to talk all things lighting, directing, and cinematography. Justin, what's your favorite thing about what you do as a lighting director?
I think it's, you know, it kind of goes back to how it even started for me, you know, thinking about photography and why I fell in love with it. It's just kind of like the story that it tells, right? You know, the absence of light, you know, the thought of this strong light source with no light around it, right? You know, kind of those, like, you know, very theatrical perspectives of lighting that engages everyone, right? It's that imagery that, you know, when you have that one single light source and someone standing in the middle of it, or that window that has this big sun that's coming in that kind of, you know, manipulates the image, or you know, that famous Grand Central shot, right, where like the rays of light are pouring in. It's just the dramatic imagery of lighting that, you know, kind of manipulates your whole perspective of it, and it just feels grandiose, right? It makes it feels that like it's this magnificent piece or image, and that was always engaging to me, solely because it's like at some point in your career or in your education process, you realize that everyone wants to be a cinematographer or a director, right? You know, no one wants to be sound. No one wants to be the AC. No one wants to, you know, no one wants to do the, you know, the work that feels like it's the, you know, the worker's work, right? But you don't realize that there's artistry in all of that, right? You know, sound design is still a thing, right? You know, ACs and the focus on that your gaze is literally, you know, kind of that it creates that kind of, you know, intuitive perspective of subjectivity, right? Or objectivity, depending on how you set the focus or the gaze. So it's like, it's just, you just start processing, you know, the artistry differently. You know, it's like kind of keeping yourself in a space of art. It kind of allows you to engage whatever you're doing differently, right? Like if you feel like lighting is three-point lighting, it'll always be three-point lighting to you until you start to like really wake up and watch the sunrise, right? Or just, you know, start processing what you like, right? Like, you know, seeing these images at a higher level than you can produce actually expands your mind, right? It actually expands your understanding of what you're doing and how you can create it. Because guess what? If you're striving to hit this like high polished image and keep missing, guess you're still closer than the person that didn't have that aim, right? What's going to ultimately happen is people are going to say, how did you do that? And it's beautiful. But internally, you're like, I didn't even come close, right? But people are going to literally start being like, who is this person and how are they doing this, right? And literally, I would not say this if this wasn't something that's true, but it's just, you keep striving for something bigger, right? And then people are just going to continuously, you know, just wonder why. You know, you are who you are, or you're the young guy who's doing all this, right? Or, you know, you're this person who's came out of nowhere, because it's that mindset of, you know, I this is what I'm aiming for, so I'm going to try to shoot for it. And that whole perspective allows you to get closer, because you're actually driving in a direction opposed to, you know, figuring it out as you show up.
You were talking about bone structure. Which made me also think about just the body, you know, hair, skin texture, of course, skin tone. What's your relationship to that like? And what? How can paying attention to those details make one a stronger lighting director?
I think the most valuable commercial, I mean, the most valuable information that I've ever learned was on a skincare commercial, where a dermatologist said that, porous people receive light better. So I did not even think about engaging that perspective of lighting, until that moment. So I feel like embodying as much information as possible only makes you a better creator, because you're pulling from different things. I think a lot of the guys that I work with, and a lot of the, you know, the people that, you know, names who continuously are spoken in the film world, are not using these traditional ways of lighting. And the reason why they're, you know, making these beautiful images is they're splitting all aspects of it, right? You know, it's like, you know, it's not just filtration. It's like, well, let's use a completely different substrate to create a lighting source, instead of just using a conventional light, right? Because, you know, conventional light is easy. Let's do something that's hard and, you know, that looks more organic to create this, you know, refraction, like where it's like this light bends, where it hits two sources, or it'll come through the window, hit something on the ground, and then hit back to create a secondary light source, right? But that's interesting because now the person walks through it and they're lit the whole way, right? And it's one light source that's been, you know, either whether it with a mirror or some kind of like reflective surface on the floor to come back up at the person's face, like, or just polishing the floor so it's shining enough that that light source that's hitting the floor comes back to become a key light when they walk through. Like, it's just thinking about all those things that happen naturally, right? Like, because remember, the thing that I always say, that's always the most relevant when people are trying to process it. Think about the sun, right? There's always a high and there's always a low. So if you're thinking about the high, low, you always, or there's always a sun and there's always a shadow, or there's always, you know, if you know that the relationship between a house, it's like, you know, there's east and west, right? You know, so it's like, and again, approaching it from a news perspective or, you know, lighting design perspective, it's just kind of creating those references or images that you're trying to hit, and then try to hit that higher quality image. And I always try to preach, you know, try to produce things outside of your reach. That's the only way you get better. If you're trying to aim for where you are, you're not moving at all. You know, produce something big, fail, and then produce something bigger the next time.
That's beautiful. I love these elements we're getting into and the technical things. It made me think of human elements. What have you learned about things like intentionality and the value of collaboration? Because we can't forget those things, even though we're talking about physics and technology.
I mean, I think intention with anything is a prevalent conversation. You know, if I engage you with this intention of, you know, gaining something, it'll come across, but I'm not, right? I mean, I'm engaging you as a person, right? We're talking and we're having an honest conversation between two people. And, you know, my intention is to communicate that, whether, you know, it's received from whoever's listening to it or not, that's an interpretation. But the intention here is me and you having a conversation. And, you know, we're very open, and, you know, it's casual, but, you know, we're being as informative as we can. Professionals, right? And that is going to come across naturally, right? Like, but then, you know, an engaging, or at least for me, my intent is creating an engaging space so people can learn, right?
For those who don't know, what is the basic lighting setup? I think I'm thinking three-point lighting. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
No, I mean, three-point lighting is definitely something that is a technical term that is used. And, you know, it's something that has a key light, a fill light. So a key light would be this source, the dominant source. The fill light would be kind of on the shadow side. And then, you know, a backlight or edge, kind of what this blue light source is doing to me. So it's just kind of a modeling. It's just shape, creating some kind of shape. But again, that's just the beginning, right? That's how you kind of start to articulate your light spaces. And Sometimes it's just, understanding what 3-point lighting is, but then it's like, all right, I have three windows, right? I have a hard window, I have a soft window, and I have an ambient window, right? So it's like thinking about how this room is with 3-point lighting kind of starts to allow you to kind of create some kind of lighting design when you're creating a space. So, I when I was in college, I also studied theater, so it was kind of, learning in the round kind of helps with that a lot too, because you start thinking about, how everyone's looking at the space, right? Because you're not just looking at it from this look. You're in the round, so there's 360 access to seeing this image.
That's so true. I was just thinking actually about my own theater classes and then the lighting relationship in that industry as well. You just brought all that to mind. And it made me think about space. What do you love about working in this thing called space? Because it can change no matter where you're
Yeah.
at. Does that make sense?
That's why I teach live classes, is because, it all changes, right? Like, we can tell, I can, I, we can plan every day and say, guess what? It's going to be a sunny day and this window behind me is going to be blown out until we shoot. And guess what? It's rainy and it's cloudy. And now all of a sudden it's a dark room. What are you going to do? Oh, I mean, at certain levels of filmmaking, you can say, all right, well, we'll come back tomorrow. But, most shoots, that's not the case. It's not. It's so it's like you have to kind of figure out, how you do that and, how you move fast. And that's how people get hired, is that they just start to create these, redundancies and workflows based off of, the experience, right? Like, some people are like, all right, well, I have all the lights, but, when you're doing a company move, like packing up the lights and going to another location, it's important sometimes just to have more lights so that you can be ready, right? Or, right, thinking about just logistics, right? How many people you have, like how much space you have, and the time that you have to do it, right? It all changes, because it's not just predicated on the space. If it was, we can make anything and everything, right? It's always the pressure cooker that we create for ourselves. How much time do we have? How many scenes are we shooting? And what is it going to take to get this done before we, hit overtime or whatever the other stress point is. So it's like there's so many variables. Like we can't just say we're isolated in this vacuum of light, because it's not true. Because an AD will tell you, let's go.
Exactly. So many variables. In fact, that brings to mind color. What do you love about color, and how do you handle the variables when that's incorporated into your work?
I think it's important, because if you understand like color science, you kind of start to understand a lot more, because you can involve more departments, right? Like nowadays, for me in lighting design, especially for film and television, it's set design, right? A lamp or a fixture in a room is more valuable than a lighting unit, right? Because now it helps the composition of the image, right? Now you have highlights all over the room that aren't, artificial lighting. So it kind of extends that sense of naturalism, because now people are walking in and out of shadows, but they're also standing in front of large highlights, that kind of create this depth in the image.
Yeah, that is true. All these variables and just how everything's just working in concert
No, it
together.
always is. I think it's like, with the intention of understanding that it's this, you can kind of like shrink the communication grounds, because it's like everyone's pooling their mind to kind of help this.
Yes, that's small. What do we call that again when we do that with our fingers again to create the
I don't know. I just call it a box, but I'm sure it's like frame lines, some sort
Yeah,
of
the
like.
frame lines. For those who didn't see, we're doing that classic director's, index finger thumb thing and creating the screen, and just the view that you might be looking through in any space. And Justin's talking about shrinking that. And I guess calling back to something you said at the top of the episode about how did you say, we're not lighting a room, we're lighting this box. I think is something that you said. It just seems to change the whole perspective. 'Cause
No,
I
it
ain't.
does.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it Right. It does change your perspective because you're not, when you're moving in for coverage, you still can light that same box. Box is not complete. You can keep elevating the box. It's just that this shot, the box looks this way, and this shot, the box looks, you know, this way. And, you know, generally it's like on the wide shot, you let a lot of things go and you just play it up in the tights, right? Or in coverage. But like, you know, it's again, it's a box. And it's like, as long as you're fighting for the best image, you'll always produce something good. Like, you know, you'll always see something that you need to do. Like, it's just, like you said, it's the intentionality. It really is. It's like, all right, well, something doesn't look good about it, so let me clean it up. Like, it, as long as you know that there's always an opportunity, you can Bob Ross anything. And I use that reference because he messes it all up and makes it look better than it did. Literally.
No, literally. That's a lot of the fun of his process of just, oh, we'll mess this up. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it was intentional. And then it turns into something else, no matter how subtle or how grand. And suddenly something new is produced. So if you have that attitude, that's fun. And you've said it already. You strike me as a guy who you're looking for the fun in the people you're working with and the space that you're in and the technology that's available and maybe even some of the limitations.
But I mean, that's a constant puzzle too, right? And the time. And if you think of it as a puzzle instead of an obstacle, it's like, how do you put the pieces together? And it's a mindset thing. It really is. After a point, it just becomes a mindset thing.
Keep that good energy going forward, 100%. What have you seen when it comes to lighting our people or lighting darker, melanated people? How have you seen the puzzle pieces and the creativity continue to blossom?
I mean, one, because it's more interesting to see our faces now, and it gives us a lot more access, and you know, more technicians who I guess look like us working in the bigger arenas also is helping too. Because when you think about it, it's a palette, and the reason why, you know, I have a better understanding is because I have an array of that palette, right? I've experienced, you know, darker than me. I've experienced lighter than me. I've experienced so many shades of me that I can say, this looks right on the screen, right? Because I'm looking at the screen and I'm looking at the person and the person looks just like they look on the screen. And I'm confident enough to say, it's fine, because someone else would be like, well, they're dark. And my response would be yes, because their skin tone is that skin tone, right? Like, and you know, it's that, I don't know if it's confidence, but it's that security to know the palette, right? Like, because then you can defend, you know, your interpretation of that palette, and understand why, right? Understand why I feel that, you know, me being, you know, kind of muted and slightly underexposed for me is okay. Whereas, you know, you're standing in front of a direct light source in the window where someone would say that's more elegant, right? You know, it's just an interpretation. It all is, right? I mean, I could turn on a light source that, you know, would overexpose me and, you know, balance me to the window, but it's a choice, right? It's all a choice.
That's fantastic. Everything is a palette, I think is how we just heard you say it. And being able to perceive the palette and just move in what's, you know, whatever your interpretation is to make it, man, it's just the way you just break it all down. And it's just exciting to hear, because you're just really increasing my perspective right now, and calling to mind like featurettes and things, people of the craft like yourself who are just perceiving the world a certain way. And it just sounds like abundance language coming from you, of just like the ambient light or the reflective surfaces, like what's available to us. I might be getting a little bit of MacGyver feels too. And it just sounds like artistic abundance to me. It's great.
You listen to all the greats, anybody who writes a book about filmmaking, they all have a similar conversation. I mean, you know, there's books out there and people are talking about obscurities about creating imagery. Like they'll talk about like, you know, architecture or the absence of light because it was a certain time period, right? Like, you know, where is light coming from? And the more you read and the more you kind of like see other people doing the same work you're doing, and that's something I enjoy doing. So let's even kind of skew it to there is like paying attention to people ahead of you, paying attention to people who are like dominant in their careers. You learn so much because it's the way they articulate those things. And it's generally people who are like, I'm not good enough, so I want to be better. that like are always dominating. Like it's like, or they just have this like open understanding of what they're doing. And it always comes from like simplifying it, like taking it, stripping a lot away, like to the point of where you're like, I feel deficient that I might not be able to create what I need. But those are the moments where you're like, because you're so far outside of the box because you have none of the toys that you're used to, and you're intentionally pushing yourself to create the same image or work or whatever you're doing.
Man, that's exactly it. In fact, that's a good segue. Who are some of your heroes, and what resonated with you about them that is a part of your internal toolkit when you're going on set?
I mean, look, it's everyone that I started with, man. I don't want to give myself a bad name, but I was always the guy that was always asking questions. I was the young guy that was always talking to the old guys. Like, if the old guys weren't talking to me, I was the guy that was following the old guys. And they were like, why does this guy keep following us? But it's like, the thing about it is like, when you start proving that you care, they just give you everything. Like, it's like, people who are at the top of their class, when they see something that they see in themselves in you, they just deliver like free information like forever until you prove them that you're not that person anymore. but it's true. It's like literally, and then like you're collapsing time, right? You're really collapsing time. So like the reason why you can climb so fast is because you're not hitting the same barriers. You're not hitting the same conflicts. You're allowing yourself to get that softer blow because you're talking to the people who've been there, right? For the same reason why you don't touch something hot, because you know that, you know, that is hot, and you know the response in your hand. Like, so you're not going to do it, or you will, right? Because you want to see how hot it is. and it's just that kind of call and response to that behavior of, you know, doing it. And training. And, you know, again, it still goes back to how I learned and how, you know, how I was raised is, you know, with my granddad in the tool shed first. And then, you know, going from the tool shed to, you know, lifting the thing or applying the thing, and then going eventually, you know, a simple. Again, it's just life. We all have our rubrics. We all have our, you know, processes. You know?
Awesome. Let's talk about relationships on set. And maybe some of the roles in, where does the lighting director fall, I guess, within cinematography, and what are your relationships like?
What I'm learning now is in Africa, I think lighting designer is kind of the all-encompassing lighting person. But for me, lighting designer is generally a term used for like concerts, broadcast news, theater. And for filmmaking, a gaffer or chief technician is something that I would use for film or television. But with that, with those definitions, as a lighting designer, it's essentially the DP, right? Like in news and television, it's, you know, you're shading the cameras, you're kind of allowing those elements to kind of create the optical look of whatever your lighting palette is, right? You know, me understanding the balance between this window versus my face is going to be something important, right? Because if I'm doing a live show and this window is changing all day, I have to chase that window, right? Like for that window to either be exposed or to be underexposed. So my light source and everything in the room is going to start changing as that light source changes. So with that, you know, you kind of start thinking about a lot of the practicality of it all, because, you know, especially in live TV, everything's changing, but you can't, they're still expecting the brand, you know, whatever that network is, right? And they're not deviating, and they're holding you to that standard. That's why you're there. But, you know, everything happens fast. Everything happens live, and you have to respond. So you just start to, you know, learn tricks to kind of do that, right? Learning and now speaking as a lighting designer, as I'm talking about a gaffer in the TV world or film world, it's just controlling the light, right? Like understanding the plan that you and the cinematographer has together to help tell that story. Maybe it might be something that you learn in the scout or the recce. It may be something that you learn on a day because the room changed so much. So it's just like, how you guys are, how the team kind of communicates, and how you delegate that to your team, your personal team, to execute that so that all that stuff either is either prepared or ready to do when we come to work.
Awesome. What does the best boy do, the gaffer, and the grip?
Best boy, that's a generally a position that goes across two departments. There's a best boy grip and there's a best boy electric. Generally, it all depends on the scale of the job, but it's generally a management department role, where they hire people, they get all the a lot of the orders in, they're in charge of the inventory, they do paperwork. So it changes. Some people it's just the best guy on the job, so they usually get that guy the role because they know they're the go-to guy, right? But it's all scale, right? The higher the scale, the more management it is. The lower the scale, the more it's about who's the guy that can get the job done and assemble a team or help manage a team when you're not around. Oh, the grip. Yes, the grip is someone who helps cut light. The key grip is the head of the department. They also do like camera support, and they also and again that changes, that word changes regionally too. So I know in the UK they do everything, and the electrics just plug in lights or just plug in power. I know in the Caribbean it's the same way. I as I'm learning more in Africa, I feel that they grips do camera support, they do flags and all that stuff too. But as I learn more, but I know based on the traditional Hollywood, in America, grips are generally people who do camera support, flags, and help soften light. But in Europe it's different, in Italy it's different, Africa is slightly different, in the Caribbean also.
That's amazing how things just change that, or sorry, not change, how things are just different in different regions, but are still, you're still getting the job done. You're still interpreting these spaces and these lights. Or you still have to do that. You're just delegating things differently, and you're just kind of figuring out like where you fit in, especially if you're in a position like yourself of teaching, like coming from the Hollywood model to African continent, to different countries, and just seeing, like you were talking about the power, you're about flags. This has been amazing, and I just one of my favorite parts of this discussion was just, the lighting talk is great, the physics, the science, the technology, but I think we kind of brought it full circle again with the end there of like, there are multiple departments and they're all peopled by talented folks who are making it all work. You can let give the director time to do what they do best. Give the actor time to, what did you say? They'll find the light, in fact.
I mean, the majority of the time, if you give it a nice approximation of where they're going to land, they generally find the exact light source. Like when you start thinking of a space on a film set as a world, most people sit near the light source, right? Because it's warmer, right? You can actually see things, like you can read, like so you just start thinking about it, how you interact with a space, and it's more psychology than anything. It really is. Like putting a bounce light source on the floor opposed to above, when it's a dramatic scene, think about it. Like psychologically, when you're sad or you're thinking about something, you're looking down, right? Like a light source up here is not going to create an eye light down there, right? So like you got to start thinking about all of those, tools and mechanisms. And yes, learning all the techniques are important, but once you get past it, you got to start thinking about the element of humanity, right? Like, because that's the realism of it all, right?
Exactly. No, that's well said. In fact, I forgot one more thing. We gave you your flowers earlier, but let's do it again before we close out. Again, congratulations on your Emmy. How did that feel?
I mean, it felt good. I mean, I ended up donating it to my high school. You know, it was exciting. You know, I'm not a braggadocious person, so you know, to me, it always feels like it's another award. And not even to minimize it, you know, it's a big award, but you know, I tell people it's my first, because I have a lot of time left. And that's not to dismiss it. That's not to say that it's not a major accomplishment. It's just to say I still got to work. Still got bills to pay, you know, all that stuff that still goes with it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's a great accomplishment. I enjoy it. You know, the thing that was so beautiful about being able to get it and donate it to my high school is it created a lot more or the intention was to create more opportunities or to make it feel tangible, right? So that someone else can see how close I am to them and how respectively close they are to getting it. And that was, you know, kind of the speech that I gave or to the students at my high school was just, you know, keep pushing. Don't stop. I mean, it's going to get hard and it's going to get harder. It's just being okay with that discomfort and, you know, keep moving and finding ways to stay motivated. Because it's like, it's not the tangibles. The tangibles literally become unrewarding at points. So it's like, you got it. Like I said in the beginning, it's like, as an athlete, there's days where you don't want to work out, but you got to figure out what's going to motivate you to go. And you have to fail a lot and be okay with it because, you know, failure is the lesson, not just in the film world, in the real world, it's going to keep happening. We all know we can tell our personal stories all day, but like, it's just, and just moving, right? Like, how do you adapt? How do you respond? And what is the choice you're making?
I love that. And thank you for creating access. I've heard that through line throughout our whole conversation with you donating your award of just like, you know, hey, I've got to go back to work. And one day, hopefully that'll be one of you, you know, at the high school who see the award and you're like, I want to do that. You'll have to cultivate the same attitude.
Not to make it more localized for me and you, but it's like, you know, people want to be basketball players because that's a tangible example. It's a tangible example. It's not that it's the only way. It's a tangible example. You know, music, tangible example, right? But who do you know that's, you know, that won an Emmy that looks like you, right? Who do you know that has a Grammy that looks like who do you know, right? Like, who do you know that, like, it's not the names you can name, like, it's just, it's the personal moment where you're like, oh, this person, you know, whatever you say after that name, right? And that's the story that's told from that experience.
Yeah, it's like the focus is on craft and access, like in creating, like it's like the community keeps ballooning. At least that's what I see in my mind of just like, you know,
like it's tangible. Well, he looks like me and he talks to me this way, right? And he's very unassuming. I would never expect this from him. Like, and what did he do? Who is he? Right? Like, because in a casual conversation, you know, without, you know, it's the intention that you bring and showing people that you're approachable, that how it changes their perspective of it all, right? Because you can be this, like, you know, monarchical human who doesn't share any information. And, you know, not even to get hyper-political because I use the word monarchy, but it's like you also become so in a vacuum that so you're limiting yourself by closing yourself off. Like, and, you know, at that point, with the understanding that you're going to do this for your career, it's like, how are you getting better? What are you creating different than you started? Like, you know, I kind of want to sustain and I also want to feel good. I don't want to feel drained. I don't want to feel tired. And again, how we started the conversation, it's like creating examples, right? You know, me coming from a small town, people get excited when they hear things about it, right? So now it's, you know, kind of amplifying that. I was, you know, for me, my parents, both educators, my dad who worked in, you know, finance, you know, a bunch of doctors and, you know, people who know jobs that are traditional and, you know, in our reality, but no one from the art place, right? So, you know, a lot of people thought I was an actor, right? And a lot of people didn't understand, you know, what I did until I was like, oh, just go to the theater or a concert and look up. And all those lights that are on, that's what I do. But like, it's not a thing that people are thinking about, like, because TVs is this magical thing that just happens. And that's not even the, you know, again, to diminish what we do, but in a very small, in your face, relatable way, that's what it is, right? Like, and we hold the images that we see in front of us on these screens as, you know, not idols, but as celebrities, right? That's what we call them. And, you know, we know because we create these images how human they are, right? But they become so magnificent because they're on this screen in front of us. And selfishly, I don't want to be the only one that looks like me anymore. yeah, but I mean, it's your intentions and your impact. And, you know, I had, again, I keep going back to my examples, you know, my dad and my granddad. It's like, if you mention their name in their circles, they're always the guys that are like, oh, he's a good guy. So it's like, I get it, honestly. It's I can't really go far away from the tree where the apple fell from. So, yeah.
Thank you for saying that, man. That's great. Justin, this has been an amazing conversation. I thank you so much for being on to share these invaluable gems. One last time, can you tell us what's coming up for the 3-day lighting workshop that's taking place here on the continent, guys? If you've been following, I live in Zanzibar. And can you plug the socials or the website? How can people get involved?
Instagram socials, Legos Lighting Class. You can also follow Lights, Camera, Diaspora. And that's the same across all socials, Lights, Camera, Diaspora. You know, Ani Productions, we're with Multi-Choice Talent Factory as well. We'll be doing 3 regional workshops, one in Kenya, one in Zambia, and another one in Nigeria. Dates ranging from May to June for those. And, you know, that's just a regional. So it's like East Africa will be Kenya, West Africa would be Nigeria, and then the sub-Saharan countries, not counting South Africa, would be. And you know, those classes are cool. And we're, you know, for us, we're trying to make the big push on doing these regional workshops because it's the access that you get, and the thing that we enjoy about Multi-Choice Talent Factory and working with them is that they have this 9-month workshop that they do where we have access to literally when I was in Zambia, it was 9 separate countries, not 9 separate sub-Saharan countries, with like 4 to 5 students representing each country, right? Where I'm feeling the same, Kenya and Nigeria would be the same, where it would be, you know, West African English-speaking countries. And then, you know, actually, no, it didn't matter because we did have a bunch of Portuguese-speaking sub-Saharan countries. So yeah, it's all over. I can get more information on how to activate that part, but to do the Lagos Lighting Class, which would be in Abidjan and Lagos this year or this quarter, meaning June and July, would be advertised on the Instagram website.
Awesome. Yeah, guys, follow Lagos Lighting Class on Instagram, on all the socials. I'm going to put them in the show notes as well as the blog. I always add even extra resources there. That's Josiah's Voice Podcast at WordPress.com. Follow me at Josiah's Voice Pod on Instagram because I like to share a lot of film resource pages as well, including but not limited to Lagos Lighting Class, because a lot of dates will be coming out. And we're so grateful to have people like Justin Davis, who are just, they just enjoy sharing and creating the access and the passion that you have for what you do as a teacher, as an artist, really shines through, no pun intended. It really comes through, it's very obvious. So guys, make sure you link up with Justin as well. If you enjoyed this episode, again, like Josiah's Voice on Black Filmmaking, wherever you get your podcasts. And I'll talk to you on the next one, y'all. See ya. If you enjoyed that episode, I invite you to subscribe on your favorite listening app. To keep up with the show, you can follow me on Twitter at Josiah DOCX and on Instagram
at Josiah's Voice Pod. And if you like my theme music, it's called Brewer B by Mateo. The link is in the description. Thanks again, and talk to you later.